magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Len, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, what is going on?
Oh, Len, it is going. It is going. I am so happy to be here and looking forward to this episode of the Sweep Spot Podcast.
Episode 364.
What? Wow. That's, Len, that's quite impressive. I can't believe it.
It is. Ken and I are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we talk Disneyland. We host the number one podcast hosted by two former Disneyland studio cast members.
Number one.
We are also authors of the book Queening the Kingdom.
That's right.
You can get our signed copies on our website, thesweepspot.com. There's two different books, and if you want a deal, you can buy them together and be shipped together, and they're both signed. If you don't care about them being signed, you can go to Amazon and get them there. Also get digital copies wherever those are sold, like Kindle, and then audio through Audible and wherever audio books are found.
And if you like Disneyland, if you've ever liked Disneyland in the past, these books are for you. So they're really great to for your Disneyland book collection.
That's right. Also, we have a Patreon if you'd like to help support our show. It really means a lot to us, and it really does help us as we have more episodes. There's more costs, and so we have a Patreon if you'd like to help support our show. We don't have a subscription where you have to pay to listen. It's a free podcast.
Yeah.
And we don't have the support of YouTube, so like the YouTubers have. So So we have this, and so if you'd like to help support us, for $5 or more per month, you can get one bonus episode per month. It's just Ken and I recording various topics surrounding Disneyland, and also you can join us live as we record our current events once a month, and you can join into the chat room, and we'll kind of put in your comments. Sometimes we'll include those comments that you have in the chat room. And sometimes the chat room just kind of goes on its own thing.
It becomes its own little environment to you.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's a fun place if you want to just chat Disneyland with other people that also have the same love.
And they're highly intelligent and have good taste, which is why they're there.
They do. Yeah. They really do. Yeah. So to do that, you can go to patreon.com and search the Sweep Spot, or you can go to our website, thesweepspot.com, and there's a link on our front page, and you can join there. Ken, who's our guest tonight?
Well, we have Kevin Lively. He did work with Imagineering, and he offers creative consulting services, and, you know, basically, a show writer is the term that you'd use at Imagineering. He also worked in Disneyland before he worked at Imagineering. So we're going to talk with him about those things, and I'm sure it'll be great. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Let's get right into it. Looking to book a vacation to Disneyland Resort, Walt Disney World Resort, Disney Cruise Line, Disney Alani, Disneyland Paris, Adventures by Disney, Universal Studios Hollywood, Universal Studios Orlando, then I can do that for you. If you contact me and we can talk about all the different options and dates, and we can kind of even make recommendations on which days might be the best for you to go. And also as a complimentary, when you book with us, we will book your dining for you if you'd like, special events. And we also, when we book a vacation for you, we just don't say have a good time after we book it for you. We are there every step of the way. We contact you before your trip to make sure everything's squared away. We even have a checklist to make sure that you have everything you need. Reservations, dining, all these different things. Your transportation, if you need help with that from the airport, any of those sort of things, we can help you with that too. We want to make the vacation the best it can be for you, because I know that vacations aren't cheap, and we can help you do that. So if you contact me, that's Lynn, and the email is lbarron@concierge.com. That's LBARRON at concierge.com. Or you can go to thesweepspot.com, and there's a link on our front page there. You can click on that, and there's information on how to contact me. But I'd love to talk to you and help you book the best vacation possible.
This is Blue Leader. All wings report in.
Blue 6 standing by.
Blue 2 standing by.
Blue 4 here.
Blue 5 standing by.
Blue 3 standing by.
Blue 7 standing by.
Good luck, pilots.
So, Kevin, did you grow up going to Disneyland?
I did. I grew up in Southern California before my parents divorced, and when I was in about seventh grade. Mm-hmm. We lived in Santa Clarita, so the Valencia area, also of Magic Mountain fame.
Oh, yeah.
So we had a season pass for Magic Mountain growing up because it was right around the corner.
Yeah.
So a lot of years there. And then Disneyland, a lot of trips. Growing up there. Also, my dad worked for General Telephone back when they used to have GTE nights. And so they would have like private parties at night. And those were the best trips in the history of Disneyland because it was overnight, no crowds, walk on everything. Those were the special trips. Annual pass. Even when I moved to Bakersfield in high school, and then before I moved down there, had an annual pass and went down regularly. It's not too much of a trek if there's no traffic.
Yeah.
But yeah, spent a lot of time growing up at Disneyland. A lot of times watching Captain EO, Star Tours, Jungle Cruise, Mr. Lincoln. Mr. Lincoln was always the way I was able to get one more attraction in before leaving. Because my dad was not going to say no to going to see Great Moments of Mr. Lincoln. It's right there by the exit. So that was the way I would weasel in one more attraction. But yeah, I've growing up and the glory days, when you go down to Disneyland, they had the purple cups with all the Mickeys on it.
Oh, yeah.
They had Mickey-shaped tortilla chips.
Oh, yeah.
Those were cool. Just a lot of fun memories growing up there. And then I did my first trip to Walt Disney World when I was about 5 or 6 years old.
Oh, cool.
So I've been there far less than Disneyland. I did trips to Disney World when I was like 5. I think there's one in when I was about 13, and then one after I graduated high school. I did a trip then, and then years later with my wife, our honeymoon, and then family trips after that, and then a lot of work trips. So I've become very, very familiar with those two resorts. Okay. But yeah, Disneyland, I would consider my home Disney park.
Yeah. So did you want to become an Imagineer before you... What kind of preview the next question, but before you became a Jungle Cruise skipper?
So it was my intention to, as silly as it is, I learned after the fact, my naive logic was, sure, I'll go to Disneyland and I'll go to Cal State Fullerton, also known as Cal State Disneyland.
Yeah.
Because it's right down the street. And so I'm like, all right, go there, get a job, work attractions, and work my way up to Imagineering, because that's what they teach you when you're a kid, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, you got to get in the door and work your way up, you know, hand you a broom in your case, someone hand me a mic in my case, and just work my way up. And turns out that is not the typical route to Imagineering.
Yeah.
So things just kind of fell into place, right time. That was the ultimate goal, was to work my way up to become an Imagineer. Interestingly enough, it wasn't, I didn't know what I wanted to do there. I just knew it was a creative environment.
Yeah.
I knew and respected its legacy. I wanted to be part of it. I wanted to help, you know, create Disney attractions. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I started meeting more meeting Imagineers, kind of took me under their wing. I really found my call as a show writer.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's large enough that you have to kind of have a specialty, right? You know, WDI is to the point you can't just say, well, I want to make rides. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, how so? I mean, are you a writer? Are you a sculptor? I mean, what are you? You
know? Yeah, that's probably the number one question I get is, you know, I want to be, how do I become an Imagineer? Mm-hmm. And this goes for kids. I just had a lunch with a local kid and his family. They found out I was an Imagineer. We had mutual friends. And so we had a lunch and he wants to become an Imagineer. And my first question to him is like, well, what is it you want to do? He's like 9 years or older. So he's like, I want to make rides. I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, as you grow and you start diving into art and you start diving into writing, find it is what you like, because, you know, Tony Baxter will say, well, I'm a ride guy. Unfortunately, HR does not recognize that as a job title unless you're Tony Baxter.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is I want to be an idea guy. Well, okay, cool. Everyone has ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the guy in accounting has ideas too. Brilliant ideas about money that I can't understand. But you want to make sure you bring something to the table. As Kevin Rafferty, you know, told me, and that's what he tells students and kids is find it is what you do best and do it better than everybody else in the world. And then they can't help but bring you on.
Yeah. I like that. So we'll back up a little bit. So the Jungle Cruise, you started there in 2007. You were saying you didn't really care what you did. You just wanted to work at Disneyland. Was that kind of the idea or?
Well, I kind of like when I hired in, I knew I wanted to do attractions. I technically hired into Critter Country attractions.
Okay.
And I trained at Splash Mountain for 2.5 days. Mm-hmm. And my trainer, like at the end of the third day, was like, she's like, you're not really digging this, are you? I'm like, well, to be honest with you, like, I like to talk. I'm a performer. I've been doing theater. I'm going to school for communication. Like, and I'm like, honestly, like, I'll do the job and I'll do it happily and I'll do it awesome. But I'm like, is there anything I can do where I can talk? I can spiel, I can interact more with guests instead of just pressing a button.
Yeah.
And so they found me a home over in Adventureland attractions. And it was actually the Opera House was my home attraction there, which is super rare because there's it requires so few people to work.
Yeah.
And people who work it have been there since before I was born. And so the seniority was very, very intense trying to get shifts. So it was a lot of closing shifts at the Opera House. And then about 9 months or no, actually about 6-7 months after I hired in, they were going to, I think, put in either new seats or new carpeting into the Opera House. Mm-hmm. So they called me up and say, hey, you need a second attraction. And I told her, yeah, I'd give my right arm to work Jungle. Because it's Jungle Cruise. I grew up, you know, in the trips going to Disneyland, always ride Jungle twice, right? Because it's two different shows in the day it's different in the day than it is at night. The way the lighting hits, you're going to get a different skipper. It's a different mood. Like it's it really Pirates of the Caribbean is going to be the same every time you go on it. Yeah. But Jungle Cruise has so many variables and like who wouldn't want to work Jungle? And so that's when I got cross-trained over there and, instantly fell in love.
I'm going to have to play this portion of the podcast for my wife because you're right about it being two different attractions. And when I was going to propose to her at Disneyland, I was trying to time out things just right because I was going to have somebody there taking video that she didn't recognize. And I was waiting and waiting, waiting. We were over by the Jungle Cruise. It's still daylight. And she's like, hey, let's do the Jungle Cruise. And I go, I'm trying to think of a good reason not to, you know? And I'm like, you know, it's better at night. And she's like, really? I hadn't heard that. So I'll have to play this portion of the podcast for her so that I could prove that all these years later, I was correct.
You know? Nice. Yeah. Especially when they used to have, I don't know what the current state is, but we had, flashlights I plugged into the boats. And if you could hit, if you had a really good light and you can hit the beam, not directly, don't shine it directly on the zebras, but hit it directly on the water, you'll get a nice rippling effect that goes across the entire veldt. And it's truly beautiful. That attraction at night is gorgeous. It's so beautifully lit. The lighting design is fantastic. It reminds me of my engagement story, because I had planned to get us a ride in the Lily Bell. That's where I was going to propose. And I had everything arranged with friends who worked up at Steam Trains. And the time comes and I go up there right when we decided, like, hey, that's going to be, you know, this is the ride you need to hop on, be at the station at this 1:00. We get there, they're like, oh, we already pulled it. I'm like, oh. So it was like a last minute scramble. And we actually hopped on to the Mark Twain for the last cruise of the night. And I took her up to the back and to the top floor of the stern over by the flag. And like right when I was about to propose, we're on, you know, the dark side of the island and stuff, the cast member comes to take down the flag. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so when they finally walked away, that's when I proposed to her. So now she has an affinity for the Mark Twain. That's her boat.
Oh, nice.
When you said but you worked out. To talk, they should have put you into custodial when you said you like to talk. So, but I guess they already had you in attractions. So that's
yeah. No, I had a friend who worked custodial. I want to say in the '80s, and he would tell me stories about. I guess there was a one day like Lucas and somebody else, George Lucas and somebody else were having lunch in Tomorrowland or something. So he was basically sent in by the other custodial guys with his dustpan to start sweeping closer and closer to them to see what he can eavesdrop from their conversations. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the custodial crew, man, you know, I'm assuming you guys got to wander quite a bit, right?
Yeah. Explore.
That's gotta be. Yeah. And you're there, you're the ambassadors you're the real Disney ambassadors, because you're there. You're the first person a lot of people see. You're definitely the first person somebody's gonna go ask a question to. And then everyone knows Disneyland for its cleanliness, and that's because of the custodial crew. So yeah, nothing but respect for everything you guys did.
Thank you. You know, we've had other writers and designers who did work Jungle Cruise, and they said that doing that, you know, informed them a lot, you know, timing, operation of an attraction, you know, crowd flow, just all that stuff. Do you find that to be the case with you?
It definitely helped. And working the different types of attractions I did, I was, when I look back at how my career kind of set me up for Imagineering, working a live ride, a live narration attraction with a cast controlled ride vehicle, awesome to have in your back pocket, because I knew exactly how I can then, you know, apply that to future attractions. I also worked a console attraction with Indiana Jones. Right. I worked a theater attraction with opera and Tiki, and I did the trackless Main Street vehicles. The only thing I never learned was like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
So being able to call upon my experiences while I was Imagineering was, I think, one of my little secrets that kind of kept me around for so long.
I feel like we could talk about just Jungle Cruise and this whole, you know, because we've had former, you know, we've had skippers on, and that was all we talked about the whole episode. But there's so much to talk about. So you did that until 2012.
Yeah, that's when I made the jump from parks to Imagineering.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What were some of the first projects you're assigned to?
Oh, wait, hold on a second. On a second, Lynn. I got a question because there's so many parallels to, you know, I went to work at the park hoping to get into Imagineering. I went to Cal State Fullerton, all that sort of. I want to know how you made the leap from the park to Imagineering.
It is a long and winding road, but I've told the story so many times. I think I can sum it up pretty quickly. Yeah. So working Jungle Cruise, they had a spiel submission program where, you know, to give the skippers more ownership of their spiel, they would encourage us to write it down, submit it, then it would go through the legal process and end up in the official operating guide, mm-hmm. which is a fantastic program because it protects all parties involved. So kind of put that in your back pocket. Another part of it was while going to Cal State Fullerton, I took a ceramics class to fulfill my little art credential or whatever it was called requirement. And one of the assignments was you had to write a paper on a sculptor or ceramic artist. And so since I worked at the Opera House and I was looking at Blaine Gibson maquettes all day, I decided to write on Blaine Gibson. Also, as a cast member, you have access to something that was called roster, which is essentially a phone book of the entire company. And if you watch that Flamin' Hot movie, the guy who created the Flamin' Hot Cheetos did the same exact thing. That was really funny to watch. And so I needed to get resources to write my Blaine Gibson paper. So I contacted Dave Smith, the founder of the Archives, back when he was still alive and running it. I said, hey, I'm a student in Cal State Fullerton. I'm a cast member at Disneyland. Can you help me out? I'm writing a paper on Blaine Gibson. He said, come on down. We're going to pull out the Blaine Gibson file for you, which was awesome. So I got to go down to the studios and to the archives, and there's a big folder filled with, you won't believe that the stuff they found on him. It was like a newspaper article from when he was a kid about when he won a soap carving competition judged by the guy who sculpted Mount Rushmore. Like they had that in this file sitting in the Disney archives.
Wow.
It's like the FBI. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Dave Smith was like, hey, you should also talk to Chris Guzman. She's a writer at Imagineering. I'm like, all right, cool. So he put me in contact with her. And I met with her. She told me stories about Blaine. And she said, hey, when you're done with the paper, send it over. I'd like to take a look at it. So I finished a paper, submit it, get my grade. I passed. Sent to Chris. She reviews it. She's like, this is really good. She says, I'm not supposed to do this. She's retired now, so I can say this. I'm not supposed to do this, but we have something called a show information guide. Would you mind taking a stab at writing one? It's kind of like a writing test. I said, sure. So I wrote one for the Haunted Mansion, and I guess she liked what she did. She became my first advocate for trying to get over to Imagineering. Now, Chris was also in charge of the Spiel submission program, I learned. And it had kind of gone dormant, so we kind of kicked it back up since I had that connection with her. When Chris retired, the Spiel submission program did not have an Imagineer attached to it, almost like a Big Brother program, if you will. So I reached out to Kevin Rafferty, who I knew from a failed internship interview I had, where there was originally two openings. I came in second, and then they got rid of the second position. So it was not an easy path going in there. Kevin Rafferty then became my second advocate for trying to get me over there. And he is the reason I made my way to Imagineering. Now, Kevin also started at the parks, also wears a lot of Hawaiian shirts, also tells a lot of puns. Yeah. And his name is Kevin. So we had a lot of parallels there. Yeah. And what happened is when Chris retired, I reached out to him, said, hey, who's running the Spiel submission program now? And he's like, well, I guess I will. And so as I'd email jokes to him, he would reply back. And we still do this. Like I was texting him a couple of days ago. Our pun battles just go back and forth. It's like ping pong. It's so much fun to do.
Yeah.
And so it got to the point where we were doing Christmas puns back and forth. And he said, okay, you need to stop until I can get you paid for this. So it was at that point, he started pushing for me to get to Imagineering. Now, by that time, we already had our first daughter, and we had a second one on the way. And I told him, like, hey, man, if I'm ever going to make this jump to Imagineering, I need to do it sooner than later, or I need to move back home and work for my father-in-law because I have a family to support. And so he worked some magic, and he found me a role helping out in what was called the Blue Sky Studio at the time. Now, that is no longer there. So Blue Sky Studio, I got my foot in the door there. I was actually working for Imagineering as a consultant while I was also working at the parks. And that lasted about 3 or 4 months until the lawyers found out. And they said I couldn't do that anymore. So I had to make the so hard decision of deciding to stick at the parks or going to Imagineering. I went to Imagineering.
Yeah.
And from there, I was a consultant for a number of years trying to become a full-time Imagineer. They kept saying, oh, we don't have a project big enough. Well, there's only X amount of time you can work as a consultant before they have to make you an employee. And I was in the middle of a big project. So they're like, okay, we're going to make you part-time. So it was 30 hours benefits or anything like that. I had plenty of work to do to fill my time. I did that for a number of years until we got a new executive on our team, and she saw my workload and said, this is ridiculous. And she's the one who finally made me full time. Oh. So it was an uphill battle the whole way. I compare it to the scene in, I think it's Captain America Civil War, where Black Panther's hanging onto the bumper of the car. Yeah. And the car is like trying to shake him, but his claws are dug into it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was kind of me for a number of years.
Wow.
Trying to, it was not an easy road to get where I was, but I had an amazing support team around me.
That always helps for sure. So I'm glad you asked that, Ken, because I was kind of moving forward here. But so what were some of the first projects you remember doing that?
Oh, okay. Do you guys remember? I'll tell you the story of my first day at Imagineering. Yeah. Do you guys remember it was the Legends of Frontierland? It was a playtest that ran. So I was in the very early development of that. This is, you know, we were really like, we're talking like so early. We're like, hey, there's that new Lone Ranger movie coming out. That's going to be a hit. Maybe we can hang our hat on that. spoiler alert, it was not a big hit and we did not hang our hat on it. Yeah. But my first day, I'm sitting in a meeting at R&D, and somebody bursts through the door and says, a jewel heist just ended in the parking lot. And I'm like, what the heck? And sure enough, we go out there, and there's a car like crashed into, or just abandoned, in the middle of the parking lot. The doors are open. There's all this like jewelry spread all over the parking lot. And apparently somebody had like robbed a jewelry store, and the cops chased them. They ended up in the parking lot of R&D before bailing and running through some canals or something. I'm like, wow, my first at Imagineering has been so exciting. So yeah, that was my first project I was on was that one. Almost immediately followed by Adventure Trading Company, which became my primary focus. And that was a test to see how experiential we can make merchandise in the parks. So rather than going on the Indiana Jones adventure, coming off and going to the gift store that says, and buying a t-shirt that says, I survived Indiana Jones adventure.
Right.
What if you had something from your actual journey that you could take with you? Something that has more meaning to it, something that you earned. Mm-hmm. And so that was the premise of the Adventure Trading Company. And we debuted it at the D23 Expo. And it was a huge hit that we got the green light to go ahead and test it the following year in Disneyland.
Yeah.
We tried many different versions to try to get into the parks. Just unfortunately, it never got picked up by one team or another. The Jungle Skipper Canteen was another early one.
Oh,
I was not the original writer for that one. I was the first choice, but because I was a contractor, they had to give it to staff people first. So they gave it to one guy who, like, after a couple weeks, left the company to go work for somebody else. And they're like, okay, I'm sorry. Well, we still have somebody else who needs ours. So they gave it to that guy, and that lasted like another 2 weeks. I don't know what happened with him. And then I finally got to step in. And so all the Jungle Cruise tributes and the stories and all that good stuff at the Skipper Canteen was one of my first big projects, as well as Jingle Cruise.
Yeah.
Because the crazy story about Jingle Cruise is I was a contractor and I had some availability. And so I asked the head of the Blue Sky Studio, hey, I have an idea that Rafferty and I used to do. I want to do a Christmas overlay for Jungle Cruise. Can I get some hours to work on this? She said, okay. She's like, you can have 8 hours to develop a pitch. And so I took my 8 hours, developed the pitch, and I pitched it, working my way up the ladder. But the Jingle Cruise year one was done. I got paid 8 hours of labor for that one. That's how we were able to, that's how scrappy that project was for year one, bringing in other former skippers who are also Imagineers. That was a real passion project, to get it up off the ground.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I thought it was well done.
Thanks. But yeah, those are my early days.
Yeah. I don't think I experienced Jingle Cruise. So that's why I didn't comment on it. I was, you know, I didn't want to say it was well done. I don't know. I didn't see it. So, but I'm sure it was good. If Lynn liked it and you worked on it, I'm sure it's good.
Well, it's still running in Florida, so you can have an excuse to go out to Disney World during the holidays because it's not busy then.
Mm.
That's sarcasm.
Well, they still got Country Bears. They can do the Country Bear holiday special down there.
They could, and they should.
They should. Yeah. I miss that. Well, we've mainly focused on Disneyland. I know you've done projects in other parks around the world. But we'll kind of focus on Disneyland for the moment. I noticed that I was looking at your website, and you had done some work for Hyperspace Mountain.
Yeah, so Hyperspace Mountain was another one of those projects out of the Blue Sky Studio. Original concept by Josh Shipley, Brian Crosby, and Jim Clark, I believe. So they had the original idea, and they had pitched it. But no, it didn't get picked up right away, but no good idea at Imagineering ever goes away. So when the whole Lucas thing came out, they dusted it off and they pitched it to bring it in. Those guys were all busy working on other projects, and so they needed a writer. So I stepped in and I was the writer for Hyperspace Mountain, which was super fun. Got to take I was actually offered the creative director role for that one. And I had to decide if I wanted to start going in that direction or stay on as a writer. And after talking with like Rafferty and a couple other people, decided to stay as a writer, which I think was the right move. Yeah. But working with, I think that was the first time I got to work with Daniel Joseph, who's now a great friend. He's like, he's our modern day Yale Gracie. He's our special effects whiz. But he's the one who helped us develop the blaster effects for those. Because when you watch Star Wars, it's not like turning on a laser pointer on and off. You see that bolt traveling. And so his crazy mind was able to figure that out for us. And I think that's one of the coolest, most unappreciated effects that you see in the parks. I also got to do all the vocal direction. So we casted everybody. Everybody in that cast, with the exception of Blue Leader, was Imagineers. Blue Leader was she's a professional. I don't remember her name, but they said she did a lot of anime voiceovers, but she's a professional actress. She did a great job, but everybody else, all different Imagineers, and I'm in there as Blue too. So if you ride Hyperspace Mountain at Disneyland, you'll hear my voice blowing up a Star Destroyer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It was really interesting trying to figure out how to put a story into a roller coaster. It's never the best way to do it, but luckily we had those screens left over from Ghost Galaxy, and so we're able to do that and take advantage of the screens and the hue. And the other challenge was, hey, we're in these ships. They don't have guns. These are defenseless. Like, so what are they? So we made them reconnaissance vessels. So they're out there. Yeah. So that's why we're being escorted by Blue Squadrons, because we're defenseless. Our job is to go there and scan for Star Destroyers. It's one of those things, if you listen into the queue and you kind of pick up on the story, if you want to hear the story, you can do it. If not, you can go on and enjoy a Star Wars version of Space Mountain. So you have to design for all levels.
I like Hyperspace Mountain. I think that was I think that was very well done. And as somebody who's been on regular Space Mountain so many times, it's a nice variation.
Yeah, I love that we can turn Space Mountain almost into like a black box theater with different productions. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. See, that's the thing with attractions that have that are inside, that have show buildings. I mean, look what they do. Look at Small World Holiday, and look, you can do the Haunted Mansion Holiday, and all. You can't do that stuff when it's bare bones, exterior stuff. Having a big expensive show building has its benefits,
Yep, especially media too, because that's gonna be your easiest swap out.
What was something you kind of like around, so that was, when did Hyperspace, I'm trying to guess on that, was like 2015 or something like that?
I
don't know.
Around there, I usually have to Google that answer or something.
No, that's fine. I was just trying to think in my head, like what was going on around that time, also. But I have on the notes here, and I wanted to touch on a few other things that you helped out with the Jungle Cruise refresh that happened a couple years ago.
Yeah, so that's what brought me back from the COVID furlough. My boss, my manager, was able to convince him, hey, we can't do Jungle Cruise stuff without Kevin. He's our resident Jungle Cruise guy. He knows the attraction better than anybody else here. And then I also have the connection with the cruise, the C-R-E-W-S cruise. And so, yeah, that's what brought me back. And so able to work with that team and trying to figure out what the vision was, what we could do with it, you know, what was the right decision, because you are playing with something that Walt touched.
That's always
playing with fire. But you,
you're answering my questions before I can ask them.
Oh, good. And so, yeah, you really have to, you have to balance that. So you have to figure out what the heart of it is and, you know, ask yourself, what would Walt do? And I always had to remind myself that the Jungle Cruise was and is the most changed attraction at this land. Like that one has gone more significant changes. Like from day one, it was a completely different tone. It was a National Geographic, you know, true life adventure tour. And now it's a comedy. And that's because of things like Mark Davis and his contributions and the contribution of skippers themselves and just the natural evolution of it all. And so that was our goal, was to respect the Jungle Cruise for what it is, but also like remind ourselves that there's a hypothetical question where people ask like what would Walt say if he walked around Disneyland? And my answer is always, he would say, why is that still here? Like how many things would he would walk around and be like, why I built this for the World's Fair, why is this still here, why haven't you done something bigger? He was not adverse, he wanted change, he was constantly evolving. And so that was what I just had to keep in the back of my brain. You know, we're doing this for the right reasons. And we're going to do it the right way. So, and everybody attached to that project had a passion for Jungle Cruise. There wasn't really, every artist who contributed, every art director, prop maker, graphic designer, everybody wanted to do the right thing. And they understood the magnitude. Having Kim Irvine helping us on the Disneyland side and Chris Beatty helping us out in the Florida side. We were also very well connected with the Imagining Resources to people, with cultural advisors too, because we wanted to make sure we were going to do right by them. That's a whole, you know, you could do a whole podcast on the whys and hows of that stuff. But at the end of the day, we needed to update things and we wanted to make sure we were going to do right. And so talking to these representatives, amazing minds from like the Smithsonian and things like that. And even talking with the animal programs people at Animal Kingdom to make sure we were helping them out, because Joe Rohde explained this perfectly. And we were having a meeting. Essentially, he's like, to us, we understand there's parks and resorts. We understand that parks and resorts is not directly associated with feature animation. We understand that feature animation is not, you know, it's all divided. But to the outside world, Disney is Disney. And so if one part of Disney says one thing, but the other part, but another part of the company contradicts and they're not on the same message, that could hurt relationships and that can hurt the company as a whole. So we wanted to make sure that we were checking all of our boxes, doing everything the right way. You know, when Animal Program said, hey, that's cool, but could you not have the chimps do X, Y, and Z? I don't even remember what it was. Like, sure. And so it's not a problem, it's a challenge. It's like, okay, how do we improve this? And so we made adjustments and I really like where we arrived. We had some fun gags.
I was, when I first heard about it, you know, the plans for it, and I was kind of, I don't know if worried's the right word, because I just don't let it bother me that much, but I was expecting, you know, I was thinking, I'm probably going to be a bit disappointed with that. And then when, you know, when it was done and I got to go see it, I'm like, hey, I like this.
Thank you. You know? It was the same thing for Jingle Cruise. Like when we first announced Jingle Cruise, people literally thought we were just going to put Santa hats on all the animals, which is why we did it on the poster. Like that was,
that's funny.
I told the artist, I'm like, hey, can you put Santa hats on the animals on the poster? Well, why? I'm like, cause that's what everybody thinks we're going to do. but after that, it went away, when it went away from Disneyland, everyone's like, oh, I liked it. I'm like, oh, because I was getting some much different messages before it even opened.
But yeah, I think it's well done. It surprised me as well. I didn't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting what it is now. And I think it's well done for sure.
And a lot of credit goes to the skippers themselves for embracing it and running with it. We gave them a lot more tools to play with. Mm-hmm. If you look into the details, a lot over at Walt Disney World, we kind of divided them up into, the best way to summarize is kind of like Hogwarts houses. Yeah. Based on different types of personalities. And these were all based off of personalities of skippers I worked with. Mm-hmm. So they have the option of joining. Like, this is not a required thing. This is only to help them have more fun with the attraction, help them develop their spiel and their character and stuff. Mm-hmm. They can join the Boat Crashers Union, which are like the action stars of the jungle, because I worked with people who played it off like that. Yeah. There used to be a lot more skippers like in the 80s and 90s who had characters who were like super macho action stars. We have the obvious rah-rahs who are like the weirdos, like my buddy Skipper Dave, who would go around the corner whistling the Popeye theme, then pull on the rope and make a whistle sound. And we have the nerds, because Commodore Small, my buddy Kelly, she knew every single plant in the jungle. She could do a spiel, and it would be a damn good Jungle Cruise spiel. Not so funny, but super interesting on every plant going around that jungle. So we wanted... Yeah, then we have the Upstream Society, who are like the hoity-toity Broadway stars. Uh-huh. And then we have the Banana Troop, or just like the overall skippers, people who just are skippers at heart.
Yeah.
And so we gave them those opportunities. And from my understanding, like, they're taking and they're running with that. And they do like crew Olympics and competitions and games, and they interact with one another. So that's really fun to see that they've embraced it and they've gone with it. But yeah, the success of that attraction relaunch would not have been as great if the skippers didn't embrace it, and they knocked it out of the park, and they're fantastic.
Did you have some work that you helped out with the movie Jungle Cruise? Did you help with that a little bit? And how did that happen?
how did that happen? Well, so we first learned about it when Dwayne Johnson announced it. That was in the morning. About an hour later, I got a call from our executive who said, "Hey, Dwayne's coming to Imagineering tomorrow." I think it was like tomorrow. Can you put together a presentation of the history of the Jungle Cruise?
Oh.
I'm like, oh, okay. And so I threw together a whole presentation on the history of the Jungle Cruise. And the next day, I'm pretty sure it was the next day, he did a tour of Imagineering, and we met him in the our library, because he was going into the art archives to visit everything. And you know, one of those moments, like, you know, Ken, you were saying like you were nervous until you saw it. When I first heard about Dwayne Johnson wanting to make a Jungle Cruise movie, I was like, oh no. Like, I was nervous about it. But there was a moment, like, all that went out the window. We were inside the art archives, and they had pulled all the original artwork out, and they lined it up on the open drawers, and so they were able to like walk it. It was really cool. But he walks up to one shot, I think it's a Bruce Bushman piece, and he said, and we were like, oh, this is the very first drawing done for Jungle Cruise. And he said, hey, whoever we get as a director, I want them to recreate this piece of art as a shot in the movie. That's when I was like, oh, okay, he gets it.
Oh.
He gets it. And then after that tour, we took him over to our conference area, and I did this whole presentation. He sat there listening, engaged. And his production team were fantastic. They were reaching out. They flew me out to Georgia to meet with the director during pre-production, and he walked me through the entire film. And they were trying to find some cool Easter eggs, like, hey, we have a map. What can we put here? We have this character. What can we do here? And he's like, oh, we have a cage of birds. You know, is there anything we could do? Any birds from the jungle? I'm like, well, no, but you have the tiki room right next door. Actually, there's a line that says, I wonder whatever happened to Rosita. So what if you have a bird in there and you call her out as Rosita? And then he goes, oh, no, we can give Paul a bird named Rosita. And so that's how Paul Giamatti ended up with a cockatoo named Rosita. It was based on a suggestion for an Easter egg.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, fast forward to, they're filming in Hawaii. They fly me and my counterpart out there to visit the sets. And Jama, the director, as soon as I see him, he goes, you want to see her? I'm like, sure. And he takes me up. And the bird is actually a boy named Lover. he's all, this is Rosita. And so, yeah, I got to see Rosita in person. And yeah, it was fantastic. And so they flew us there. And then we did a set visit again in Georgia at the studios. Mm-hmm. And they walked us through the treehouse set for they built for Trader Sam and the submarine, and showed us the props and everything, and walked us through and basically like, how can we apply this to the attraction in the parks? How can we leverage one another and all that mm-hmm. good stuff? But yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I liked all the little jokes that they added that, you know, if you know the Disneyland attraction, you'll recognize them for sure.
Yeah, yeah, they were, I would get emails from the set, be like, hey, we have a scene, Dwayne's taking a bath in the river. Do you have a joke? I'm like, yes, we do. And it's about washing ashore. Here it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then at the very end, he's like, hey, we need a joke for the end of the movie. This is the situation. They're driving off in a car. Do you have any car jokes? And I'm like, okay, well. And then I typed it up. And so Emily Blunt's last joke in the movie is, oh, you're exhausting. And that was, I sent it over to them and they were able to use that one. So it's pretty cool.
Very, very good. Wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Wow. It was cool.
So, Lynn, anything else before we ask the...
Yeah, I wanted to touch just a little bit on, because I was just at Disneyland a couple of weeks ago, and I know Ken was within the last month or so. You helped with the Toontown refresh and the Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, which I was pleasantly surprised with that attraction, and I love it. I keep going. There's so many Easter eggs and things, and I understand you did some work on that also.
Yeah, so for Runaway Railway, my responsibility was mainly the El Capitan. Okay. So all the writing for that, because Rafferty had done all the writing for the attraction itself, mm-hmm. and it's practically a clone. I think there's like a little bit of a layout difference. And so I think like one line maybe different, because we had to rewrite it because the timing was different. Mm-hmm. But that was like 99.9% done. But the queue, we were starting from scratch. All we had was... Rafferty wrote, it's going to be at the El Capitan, and it's called Mickey Through the Ears, and it's a tour of Mickey Mouse's career.
Yeah.
And so from there, the team and I figured out, what are those artifacts? How do we tell Mickey's career story as if he was a real movie star? And how do we then also tie this into the new Toontown refresh as a whole? So we had a lot of fun, got a lot of cool Easter eggs in there, and it's I love that people are still discovering things. That's super fun.
Yeah, that's all I hear about that attraction is the queue is so awesome. There's so many things to look for, and if you get a virtual queue or whatever, you know, not virtual. What is it?
The lightning lane.
Yeah, they changed the name. Yeah, or lightning route, lane. Yeah, like you kind of skip through a lot of that, which I like to see all the details, but.
Yeah, there was a presentation I watched. I checked out a DVD from the Disneyland Learning Center when I worked at the Opera House.
Yeah.
And it was a lecture that Joe Rohde did at the at Animal Kingdom for cast members. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the topic was, but the one takeaway I have from that was basically his thoughts on Fast Pass. He compared it to, we built this big, beautiful ice cream sundae, and there's, you know, whipped cream and hot fudge and peanuts and cherries and Fast Pass is somebody saying, I only want the ice cream. And so that's how I kind of like, I like to reward people for, you know, for waiting in that queue, because that's part of the experience that's going to help get you into the story and keep you interested. So, yeah. So, you know, the more you can do in there, the better.
Yeah. It's well done, I think.
Thank you.
Well, we've kept you long enough, and I feel like we could go on all these different things. We'll have to have you back. But I also wanted to ask you, what are you doing now, and how can people, if they want to follow you on social media or whatnot?
Yeah, so my generic social media you can follow me around is Livelyland. Mm-hmm. I don't post very much anymore. I'm just trying to disconnect. just for my own mental well-being. And but I also do art on the side. So I do paintings and wood carvings and things like that. You can follow me on Instagram for that at Skipper Kevin Art. And my site for that is skipperkevin.com, and it links to my Etsy store. But yeah, that's my side hobby. I started taking up wood carving as an escape. It was like, you know, you go to do Imagineering, you build really cool things, but at the end of the day, you still have to deal with executives and budgets and legal and blah, 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 blah. So I needed like a creative outlet where I could go in there and just unplug my brain and create what I wanted to create without any notes.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that for a few years, and just it's a hobby that pays for itself. So it's, it's not like I'm changing careers or anything into art. That's, my wife is an artist, so she has that one covered for us. cool. But yeah, working on some freelance stuff right now. KevinLively.com is my website. Okay. Some really neat opportunities have come about. Working on things from children's museums to other theme parks, architecture firms, helping with people do books and television. Mm-hmm. So I'm all over the place, which is really cool. Something I wasn't able to do at Imagineering. As cool as it was, you know, also you stay in your lane type deals, but able to play in some different sandboxes these days.
Well, cool. We'll put the websites in our show notes and people can come check that out for sure.
Can I tell you my favorite custodial story though?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
All right. So this is my favorite custodial story. So one day I was working Tiki Room, and Tiki Room, you can bring food and beverage in, and we had a spill. So somebody dropped their float. And so after the show, they came and saw me like, hey, we have a spill. I'm like, okay, I'll get somebody to come clean this up. So I popped a show in delay. I call up custodial and they said, we'll send somebody right over.
Right.
And then I step outside because people start to migrate towards the doors because they know, but they stop at the rope. And I come through and I'm like, hey, everybody, I'm so sorry. There's going to be a slight delay. They decided to let the birds have a snack and there is bird seed all over the place. And then I look down, this custodial lady's down there. She's like, oh, it's bird seed. They didn't tell me it was bird seed. I'm like, all right, come here. And she took care of it. But that was my, it was just like, so like serious, like, oh, they didn't tell me it was bird seed. I'm like,
oh. That's great.
So awesome. So, but yeah, you guys have been awesome. Thank you for having me. I hope I've enjoyed being had.
Yeah.
Call me up anytime. Do this again.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to.
If you had a good time, my name is Kevin. I've been your skipper. If you didn't have a good time, my name is Tom Morris.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kevin, for coming on. What an interview.
Yeah. Once again, it's somebody that I would love to talk with a lot more. Talk with them again.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fascinated, and there's just so much there that we can only just touch on some of it, but I'm so glad he came on and was willing to talk about those things with us. And just, you know, we do these topical episodes every 2 weeks, and the other weeks we have we update you on current events at Disneyland Resort. So be sure that you are subscribed or bookmarked, or however you can just regularly get updated on when a new episode comes out.
That's right. And also, this is usually the place where we'll read reviews that are left on Apple Podcasts, so the app or iTunes. And so if you'd like to do that, we'd really appreciate it. It helps us out. You can leave a review and we'll read it here. And like I said, it really does help us out. It helps us spread the word about our podcast.
Yeah, please do. Please leave a review and spread the word about the Sweep Spot Podcast. Tell people how they can listen.
That's right. And remember to go to our website. We have shirts for sale, and we have just the links to everything we've mentioned here, Patreon and our show notes from the show. We have links from the current events that we record. So go on over to our website and check all that out.
And one thing I did want to mention, if you do listen on Stitcher, I don't know if you're aware, Stitcher's kind of going away or doing something strange. So find us elsewhere. Search the Sweep Spot, and you will be able to find us in a bunch of other places. If you happen to regularly listen to us on Stitcher, we'll still be here, even if Stitcher won't be. So do find us somewhere else.
Sounds good. Until then, we'll talk to you next time.